Thank you, Tom. I have.
Welcome, everyone, to another session of eBookWorm, the monthly interview and discussion of key topics, initiatives, and leaders in the eBook movement, especially the digital audiobook movement. My name's Tom Peters, your host. Welcome from beautiful Blue Springs, Missouri, where it's a foggy day today. eBookWorm is sponsored by the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center, a sub-regional library in the national network of talking book centers, providing both content and services to print-impaired individuals. You, the members of our virtual studio audience, can pose questions using the text chat window, or if you have a microphone attached to your PC by pressing and holding the control key. Just so you're aware, this session is being recorded and will be made available on the website soon after the conclusion of the interview. Our guest today is Lori Bell, who's the director of the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center. Lori has been involved in a wide variety of digital talking book projects. Earlier this year, she was honored by Library Journal as a mover and shaker within librarianship. Lori, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I think it should be me interviewing you on this one, but I'm ready to go.
Okay, great. Why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center and the type of work that you do there?
The Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center is located at the Alliance Library System in East Peoria and Quincy, and they are our local administrators. We're also part of the Illinois Statewide Talking Book Network and also the National Network of Talking Book Libraries. And we serve about 5,000 patrons in nearly 60 counties in central and west central and northwestern Illinois. These services are for anybody that has a vision impairment or a physical disability or learning disability that prevents them from reading regular print. We ship out anywhere from 1,000 to 1,400 books a day. We also provide the machine, which is a cassette tape player. We do outreach, and we have several websites, and we're working on a lot of projects I know you're going to get into later. But we just have a great staff.
Thanks. So let's spend most of the hour talking about the various projects you've really spearheaded related to digital talking books. I want to ask you initially, what was the source of your initial interest in DTBs? What was that thing that sparked it? Was that Otis Player from Audible.com or something else?
Well, I've always been interested in ebooks and devices, and right before I came back to talking books, I worked in a hospital library where we were working on a large PDA project, and some of the newer PDAs coming out had audio features to them, so I became very interested in Audible and the Otis, and I had heard Jenny Levine do a presentation on it, and when I got back into talking books, I knew there was great interest in this because the national program was eventually going digital. So with my interest in ebooks and devices, it just seemed like a natural thing to be interested in, I guess.
Speaking of the national program, you're also a member of the long-term digital planning group of the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, better known as NLS, which is a division of the Library of Congress. And that group met in D.C. last month, correct? Or maybe it was even earlier this month. And that was the first meeting that you've attended. What are your first initial impressions about that group, and what kind of things is the group working on?
This is my first time to sit on a committee like that, and so I was really excited to be there. There were some patrons there. There were some state librarians there. There were some talking book librarians there, and then also the staff. And I was amazed at, I knew that the program served about 750,000 people in the U.S., But I was amazed at the complexity of the program and all the things that go into moving this program to digital, and how many, this is the largest book program for the blind in the world. And so the meeting helped me realize the complexities they deal with the federal government and the numbers they're working with in terms of machines and books. But it was really fascinating. One of the most interesting things I learned was that they're going to have web books and magazines, but they're going to also start circulating books instead of on cassette. They're going to come out on a flash memory cartridge. So that seems to be the medium of choice. The cost of flash is coming down. So, you know, for people with computers and other types of handheld devices that NLS approves, they'll be able to download content from the web. For people who don't have computers or who don't want to do that, they will have a player with a flash memory cartridge with a book on it. Also, they don't think they'll be, from what I heard at the meeting, they don't think they'll be out of the cassette business till like 2012, because they'll start manufacturing these players in 2008, but the first year they're only going to come out with 60,000 just to make sure that the design works well. I guess, does anybody, there was so much covered at that meeting that if anybody has questions about that, you know, I can answer specific questions, but I hate to go into any more detail unless there's something you're particularly interested in that at that meeting.
Laura, you mentioned that the NLS program is the largest talking book program in the world. Who's number two? And you know, there are a lot of national talking book programs that have been launched now, and I frequently hear it mentioned that, you know, these are all smaller than what NLS is planning in 2008, but who's number two in the world? Do you know?
I don't know who's number two. I wish I did, but I don't. I can also tell you that NLS is one of the few federally funded, tax dollar supported libraries for the blind. Many of them are privately funded, such as the CNIB in Canada, and a lot of the libraries in Europe are funded privately. I think the RNIB in the UK is privately funded. So we're lucky to have our tax dollars going for this service, I think.
Yes, this is Austin Evans in Tallahassee, Florida. And I'd like to ask Lori, like to find out more information about the committee that you're on, but I'm kind of like, what questions should I ask? Is there a spot or a website that they post the minutes to this the meeting that was just recently?
I haven't seen the minutes for the recent meeting, but their business plan and other documents are on the NLS website. I'll type that into the text chat.
Yeah, I've got that into in my favorites. But if you should come across later on if they post like more recent information. I've read quite a bit of that, and but was just trying to get like real current information.
Okay, I can go into a little more detail about you know, they first hope to offer machines in 2008. They expect the transition period will go through 2012, and that by 2012 everybody who wants one will have a digital player. They're already recording books digitally now, and so when they come out in 2008 there will only be 60,000 machines, and they expect that, like with the transition with the record player, that people may want a cassette machine and they might also want a digital talking book machine. There's a lot of discussion on who will get first priority for those machines. The first priority will be the veterans. After that, it'll be a discussion between NLS and the network libraries. And the network libraries will play a role in that once NLS starts offering books on the web, network libraries will support that with training and information about the program and how to access the books. So does that answer a lot of questions?
Lori, do you know offhand how many veterans are registered NLS users out of that 750,000? Are they going to, I guess my basic question is, do you think all of those initial 60,000 devices will go out to veterans?
No, I don't. I don't know the exact percentage, but I don't think it's very high.
Hi, my name's Angie, and it's the first time I've ever done this over here. I'm part of the Talking Book Project. I'm currently subscribed to the NLS Web Braille archive up there. I absolutely love it. It's so exciting that they're going to have books available on the web for us to download. I had two questions here for you. Can you give me some details on the players? Because I came in about 5 to 10 minutes a little late. Are we going to get CDs, or are we going to have memory sticks and that kind of stuff? Do you have any details on how the project for on the web is going to work? Is that going to be like an on-demand thing where you download stuff, or you just listen over the web?
It's going to be definitely where you can download it. I mean, you can listen to it streaming, but you will be able to download it. The player, they just sent out the RFP for player design, and the design of the player, they're going to award that contract in the next month, and then the design of the player will begin. They're going to skip over CDs, and the player will play flash memory sticks specifically designed for this player.
Lori, about the player, I know NLS sponsored that design competition probably 18 months ago now, that a design called the Duke won that competition. In your meetings with NLS, is there any indication that they're going to stick with that basic design, or are they going to go back to the drawing board completely, or how are they going to do that?
I don't know. I just know that they have a lot of specifications for the machine in terms of use and in terms of durability. I have no idea if they'll follow the Duke or not. They'll probably work very closely with whoever wins the contract to manufacture it to make sure it meets all the specifications that they have.
Did your group have any conversation about existing playback devices on the market that they saw pretty encouraging, or are they really want the design to be really from the ground up?
We didn't really talk about that. The question was asked why they weren't using a commercially available player, and they said that none of the players out currently meet all the specifications and the things they need to provide service to such a diverse population, people with vision problems, people who have trouble holding a book. So I guess they, are designing pretty much from the ground up.
Lori, I've got one other question. Sorry to bother you. I know you're just a member of this committee and not a representative from NLS, but was there any talk about if the device that NLS eventually is going to begin deploying in 2008 is going to be able to play back other types of content from other sources other than NLS? For example, to switch media or content types, could I add a could I load an MP3 music file on that device and be able to listen to that along with my NLS books?
I don't know the answer to that, but the next logical question would be, can you play NLS content on other players and on commercially available players? Because after they came out with the cassette machine, some other companies came out with machines that would play the slower speed cassettes that people could buy. And NLS said that they hope to work with commercial providers, especially those that have made machines specifically for the visually impaired. They're still working on the software and what the companies would need to do to make sure the content didn't go beyond the population it was for. But I think the intent is that, you know, with the proper precautions, their content could be played on other types of devices, but I don't know the answer about playing other content on their device.
Yeah, this is Austin again. I'm getting most of the questions that I had in my head answered. I appreciate that, Lori. How often does the committee meet, and can you be your liaison between me and the rest of us in the group that you're on? So that perhaps maybe the next time y'all meet that you can kind of report back to us?
I could certainly share news through a program like this. I don't know that I could be an official liaison, and I certainly am not purporting to speak for NLS. But in a forum like this, I would try to share the information.
Yeah, point well taken, Lori. And I guess maybe what I'm hearing from folks is that as we move closer to the launch, and as they start to get into the actual design of the device and, you know, really sort of fleshing out their system, people's interest, which is already high, is going to get only higher in what NLS is doing. So maybe you or someone else ought to try to contact NLS and let them know that this might not be, probably isn't news to them, that they really need to sort of step up, accelerate the timely dissemination of information about the national digital audiobook program that they're planning to launch.
They do plan to start issuing a newsletter each month that will go to the network libraries and will also be a part of the talking book topics. And so they really are going to try to communicate through that medium with patrons on the progress of the project.
I had a question for you. Right now, with the cassettes and stuff, say like if you get a book and author that you really like, and instead of borrowing the book 15 times on them because you like it that much, you could get copies of the book from your local library for a fee. Do you think that is something that would be possible with the digital books, or would, you know what I mean?
Angie, I'm not even familiar with providing copies of NLS books for a fee. Even on cassette, because my library doesn't do that. All I can say to that is that if you're downloading a book from the web, you know, it's probably going to remain on your PC unless you delete it, or unless NLS does some digital rights management that will erase the file after a certain point of time. So I'm sorry to say I don't know.
This is Randy in Louisville. I'm wondering if NLS has considered using a company like Overdrive to distribute their audio content for those that want to download, or is that out of the question?
What they said is they probably will be working with commercial providers to distribute the books, because most of what they do, they contract with some commercial entity. So I would say that's not out of the question, but we're a ways away from it.
Yeah, it's a good point, Randy. And A very timely point, too, because just within the past 5 days, both OverDrive and NetLibrary, which is another major ebook vendor to libraries throughout the world, have announced that they're in OverDrive's case, they've actually launched their digital audiobook service, and NetLibrary plans to launch theirs in December. So both of those major distributors are planning similar types of services. Okay, well, I sense that what NLS is doing is of high interest to the group, but I have lots of other questions to ask Lori about, so I'm going to shift gears here and ask another question. Lori, I know Friday you've got a big event planned, the Audio Ebook Expo. It's going to be a day-long event about digital audio books, and you're planning both a face-to-face event and an online event. Can you talk about how this is going to work and sort of what outcomes you hope emerge from the Audio Ebook Expo?
Yes, we have over 100 people coming to East Peoria on Friday. We're going to talk about audiobooks and ebooks in terms of libraries and also in terms of patrons for both public libraries and talking book libraries. Tom is one of our keynote speakers and is going to talk about where we have been in the area of ebooks and audiobooks and where we're going. Judy Dixon will be a speaker from NLS. She and Tom are going to talk about the different kinds of digital talking book players, and she's also going to talk about where NLS is and give more details on their project. We have Jenny Levine, who's going to provide an overview of MP3 handheld players for librarians, and is also going to talk about Listen Illinois, which is a collaborative digital audiobook project of a number of libraries in Illinois. Sharon Ruda, our regional librarian from Illinois, and Diana Sussman, the director of Southern Illinois, are going to talk about Loeb Library, which is a group of libraries, about six states that are providing Audible.com content to readers. And then Tom Peters and Jane Chamberlain are going to do some demonstrations of ebook management systems for librarians. We're also going to have exhibits. And as Tom said, OverDrive and NetLibrary just announced new product launches this week, and they will both be exhibiting at this program. For people who can't come to East Peoria, we're going to have a webcast, which is a video and audio of some of the programs. And then for our patrons, we're going to have an audio cast right in this very room. You can come and go, and as you can see on the webpage on the right, you can get the whole program schedule and also the schedule for the webcast and the schedule for the audio cast.
And Lori, what do you hope, you know, in your wildest dreams, what would be the best thing that could come out of this event on Friday?
Well, in my wildest dreams, there would be a lot of money donated to my institution for all the projects that we want to do.
Okay. Maybe that'll happen on Friday. You never know. Okay, I want to back up a little bit, and I think the first sort of digital talking book that you spearheaded was a thing called the eAudio Pilot Project. That led into what's called the Loeb Library. Also, Project HAL was completed earlier this year. You want to talk about some of these early projects and what you learned and what were some of the significant outcomes of those projects?
In the eAudio project, we loaned out Audible.com content on Otis players, which is a small MP3 player from Audible. And people really loved the portability, the sound quality. They didn't like the earbuds. It wasn't designed for visually impaired, so they really wanted something that was more, better designed for visually impaired. The buttons were very small, And also it didn't have variable speed playback, which a lot of people enjoy. So even if most of the people really like the Otis, and if they didn't, they were still excited to get to try it.
And then that led into the Loeb Library, which is a multi-state kind of scaling up of that initial Otis Audible.com based service, correct?
Right. And Sharon Ruda is the project director on that from the State Library. And that is pretty much the same thing, except there's a shared collection between six states: Idaho, Mississippi, Montana, Hawaii, and New Jersey.
Yeah, and I should tell everybody that I've been involved in these projects too, so I'll chime in and say that one of the really interesting things about the Loeb Library project is that a lot of these devices have circulated, and there hasn't been much reported failure rate of the devices themselves. Some of them have gone missing in the mail or gone out and not come back, but not many reports of failure. So device durability, even for the Otis, which I wouldn't call one of the most rugged MP3 players out there, is quite impressive, I think.
Tom evaluated both projects, so he's more qualified to speak about it than I am. And Tom, you might want to put the URLs for those reports up in case people would like to read more about it.
Okay, I'll work on that. I'll try to do that while I conduct the interview at the same time. And then we did, Lori and I worked together on a thing called Project HAL. Lori, you want to talk a little bit about the Project HAL project?
Tom, here again, I think you should talk about the HAL project. I'll just give an introduction to it. Last fall and spring, there were a bunch of new players coming out on the market, and there were, you know, so many players available, even for the visually impaired population, that and there were a lot of questions about the players. So we contracted with Tom to evaluate the players. They seemed to come in, you know, several different types of models. One was a CD player, and another one had, you know, another couple had flash memory in them. And I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, that's a good summary. Yeah, because they were different sort of basic designs, we couldn't in good conscience say this is the best design, best device of the seven. So there are really sort of competing designs out there. Some are CD-based, some are flash memory-based, some combines, you know, functionality. But overall, I mean, all seven devices worked quite well, and they vary quite a bit in terms of manufacturer's suggested retail price. That's one thing. The other thing that they varied quite a bit on is the number and types of files that they would support.
That report is available, too, for anyone that's interested.
We'll put links up on the archive to this interview, Lori. And then you and I also are involved in a currently ongoing project called the Mid-Illinois Digital Talking Book Project, MyDTB. Why don't you say a little bit about that, and I'll chime in as appropriate, okay?
Okay, this is a really exciting project. Last fall, since there was so much excitement about the players and the content coming out, we thought, why not just do a big, as Tom refers to it, a bake-off, and this is really, again, his baby. We have 150 volunteers from 36 states, and Tom wrote an award-winning proposal which won the American Library Association Library Leader in Technology Award at ALA in June. And they provided some funding for us to buy some different players and different content. And the volunteers can try any of the players they want, and we ask that they fill out an evaluation form. And then they've had a chance to try Bookshare content. They'll have a chance to try the Overdrive Windows Media Audio. We're we're trying to get access to Net Library, those audiobooks, and they've had access to Adobe eBooks. And at the end of the year, we'll have another report about what people liked and didn't like about the players and what kind of trouble they had with the content. So Tom is the director of that project, and I also want to say that we did receive funding from the our regional library to buy some of the players, and we appreciate that. And then Valerie Brandon at the Talking Book Center and I work on this project with Tom, but he's really in charge of it.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess the only other thing I could add to that is that this sort of field test or bake-off is really based on the firm belief that it's difficult or impossible to really know how a technology is going to work, or what kind of usefulness it's going to have, what value it's going to have to a given population, until you get it into the hands of the users that represent that population. And so, Lori, coming back to the NLS National Digital Talking Book Program, was there any talk at the committee's meeting about some actual field testing of the device before 2008?
Yes, I think they plan to do that, and they also plan to do it with the web-based books. Right now they're offering 3 magazines on the web, and they have 35 or 40 volunteers working on that, and they've gotten a lot of good feedback on that program. And I also wanted to add about the MyDTB. A lot of the volunteers in our group are so eager to try these players because they want to know what works before they buy. So this gives them an opportunity to try that.
Yeah, the response has been very positive, on the verge of overwhelming. So there's definitely a demand for at least the ability to try some of these digital talking book solutions. If you've thought that I've about exhausted the projects Lori's involved in, think again, because I've got about another 6 that I want to have her just briefly touch on, time permitting. The next one, Lori, I want to ask you about is Project Unabridged, which is preparing to launch next month. Can you tell us a little bit about that program? Again, full disclosure, I'm involved in that program too. How do you see it building on the current and previous digital audiobook projects that you have spearheaded?
Well, when we started working with Audible.com, they did not have a library management system, so that we had to loan books out on the devices. They don't have any way for us to let a patron download a book and then, check it back in. So we were loaning things on devices. We started working with OverDrive about a year ago to test the accessibility of Adobe eBooks. And one of the great things about OverDrive is they do have a circulation system, so that a customer in a regular library and the people involved in that initial Adobe eBook project could go to the site, select a book, download it themselves, and it would have a 2-week checkout period. If they finished the book before the checkout period, they could return it. So then it's available. I mean, obviously there's always a digital file available, but if we only buy one copy, we can only loan one copy. So their circulation system tracks who has it, and then the book automatically becomes available for someone after the 2-week loan period, and it disappears from the person's computer who checked it out. But they could also return a book early. OverDrive told us last spring that they were going to be working with digital audio. And we said, oh, we want to be right there to try it. And our patrons, one of the things about these projects is the people involved in them are so excited because they get to try cutting edge technology at the same time their sighted counterparts do in the regular public library. So Unabridged is a project with Overdrive, and we're going to have a shared collection with Colorado, New Hampshire, and Oregon, and each state is inviting about 20 to 25 initial readers that feel comfortable with technology to participate in this, because we're one of the three beta sites for Overdrive's digital audio program. And so our patrons will be able to download an audiobook to their computer or to any handheld device that plays Windows Media Audio, and then they'll be able to have that for 2 weeks. So the libraries are in the process of getting patrons who want to participate right now, and Overdrive just launched their product. So we're hoping to get going with that in Illinois in November.
Okay, thanks, Lori. You just received another grant. This is an LSTA grant, Library Services and Technology Act grant, to undertake a project that's called Early Illinois Heroes and Heroines, a multimedia memory montage. And do you want to talk a little bit about that project, and especially the audio description part of it would be of interest to this group?
Okay. In one of my previous lives, when I was at Alliance Library System before, we had a number of libraries involved in several digital imaging projects to make text and images from local collections from the 19th century available to people. And one of those was called Early Illinois Women, and another one was called Illinois Alive. And this was 1997 and 98. And those sites still continue to get a lot of use. We propose to do, and this is really an Alliance project, and I'm more involved on the making the stuff accessible part, but there are six libraries involved, and they were all involved in the earlier projects, and we're going to take the digital imaging to the next step of creating it into an interactive multimedia presentation, but we're also going to provide audio description for those images. And I'm really excited about that. You know, everybody's heard about descriptive video and descriptive theater and descriptive television. And with this audio description, a visually impaired person will be able to go through this site and enjoy the images, because they will, if they want to hear a human voice, we're going to record the description so they can click on a link and hear a human voice. We're also going to provide the text of the description so that if they would rather listen with their screen reader, they can do that. So I haven't seen a lot of this out there on a website or on a historical website. So Kim Charlson from Massachusetts is going to train several of us involved in that. And I'm really excited about it. I hope that our patrons will enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. And then still, I still have some other projects I want to ask Lori about. The next three, maybe we can just kind of cluster them together because time is running short. You're also involved in what I would call online programming and online library services for patrons. The three projects I have in mind are Project Healthy, which is providing health information for seniors online, InfoWise, which is a virtual reference service and an online training program for the visually impaired, and Opal, which is sort of a collaborative of libraries providing a wide array of online public programs. You want to talk just briefly about Healthy, InfoWise, and Opal?
Yes, and I'll talk quickly so there are time for questions. All of those programs use this very software we're using here. About 2 years ago, Sharon Ruta at the Regional Library said she wanted to offer a book discussion online, and she knew how interested I was in this too, so I said, hey, I'll offer to investigate software that's accessible. And there aren't a whole lot of chat softwares out there that are accessible, and there weren't a whole lot with audio either. So we came across this Talking Communities iVocalize, and we use it for so many different things. The first project Tom mentioned, Project Healthy, we got a grant from the Greater Midwest region, and we're working with the University of Illinois at Chicago Library of the Health Sciences, Peoria. And every month we are doing a program with the health expert on a topic of interest to senior citizens. And Project Healthy means hearing electronically about living the healthy years. And the most recent program was yesterday. It was called The Aging Eye. And the University of Illinois, Peg Burnett and Joe Dorsch have been finding the medical experts, and Tom Peters interviews them, and then we're going to put them on CD and cassette for our talking book readers, and we've had interest from several libraries who want to be able to provide these programs. And yesterday we had 20 people, which is wonderful, and I'm now a member of every senior forum on the internet because part of my role is helping to publicize the programs to the seniors out there. The second program, InfoWise, is an online reference service for visually impaired, and I think we have about 10 states now, but we're all working together. We're using Question Point email and management software, and we're using iVocalize to help people find information, and even if they don't have audio, they can listen to the librarian. And I don't know of any, and we tried Question Point Enhanced, which at the time was the only virtual reference software that had voice over IP, and I'm not aware of any other program that has voice over IP, but we thought that especially for our patrons that was really necessary. And this software is accessible, so it's perfect. And we did offer several trainings on Google and Introduction to the Internet, and also First Search training using this software, and it just kind of went hand in hand with what we were doing in InfoWise and helping people to search information on their own. And then the third one is Opal, where we've got about 15 libraries involved, but we're doing cooperative programming so that as we build this, no one place has to develop every type of program. Anybody who is a participant in Opal has their own online room, and if they just offer one program a year that's open to the constituents of the other libraries, that's what we're trying to do. So any patrons, well, really anyone out there on the internet can come to our programs, and Cleveland Public has done some neat things with a cyber dialogue. They've had book discussions and some training sessions, and Nancy, who's here from Fond du Lac, is going to use this software for a large project, 42 libraries, congratulations, Nancy, to do training, and it's an ebook project, and since these libraries are scattered all over the state, they will be able to get training and have meetings at their desktop. So that's kind of a quick summary of all those projects, which, again, Sharon Ruta is involved in all of these, and so is Tom Peters.
Hey, Lori, let me ask you a few questions about what I see as some of the big issues that are swirling around all of these projects and initiatives, and the NLS initiatives as well. One is the DAISY format. What do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of the DAISY format? Do you think that the DAISY will become widely implemented and used as a format, either among the blind and visually impaired population or even in the general consumer market?
I'm trying to think of the DAISY format really boils down to how much they're going to mark up an audiobook so that you can search it and then get to page 1 or chapter 5 or page 225 and how you can search the book. And what we found in the projects we've been doing is that is really important for nonfiction and textbooks. It's not so important in fiction. And Kurt Silke, who was visiting Sharon Ruta earlier this week from NLS, and Sharon invited the sub-regionals to come, which we really appreciated, said that he didn't know how far down they would go with the DAISY because the NLS books are, they're primarily recreational reading. There's not a lot of nonfiction, and the nonfiction that there is not textbooks or, a lot of scholarly work. So for the fiction, I don't think it's all that necessary, but for the nonfiction, I think it's very necessary, and it's going to be really interesting the next few years because Overdrive has marked up their books, down to the page, the audio books, down to the page according to the consumer electronics standard. So it's going to be interesting to see if commercial vendors follow DAISY or if they follow the consumer electronic, and to see what the differences there are in those and what people really want, how far they really want to go with it.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And I think I saw something, there's this new company called Paperback Digital that's trying to get launched here in the mainstream commercial audiobook market. And I think they're also using that Consumer Electronics Association standard as well. So we seem to be setting up here for another perfect storm in terms of competing standards that appear to do pretty much basically the same thing. Which brings me to my second big issue, Laurie. In a lot of these projects that you've been involved in, there's sort of a key tension, if you will, is between the notion of what I call mainstream technologies that are designed for the general consumer market and what I call separate but similar technologies that are designed primarily for the blind and visually impaired market. What do you make of this tension, and do you think that when it comes to digital audiobooks, do you think that mainstream services like Audible.com and the Overdrive service and Net Library service and Paperback Digital will be a major part of how blind and visually impaired individuals access digital audiobooks? Or do you think that 20 years from now, or looking out within your crystal ball, will separate but similar be the main source of information and content for the blind and visually impaired?
I'll give you my opinion, and I'd like to hear from some of the blind and visually impaired people here. I think that all of these things will supplement what they get through the Talking Book program. Right now, there's no vendor out there that has anywhere near the 60,000 titles and audio that NLS has, and it's going to be a long time before they do. The most competitive is Audible, that maybe has 4,000 to 6,000 audio titles. Net Library starting out with 500, and Overdrive has about 1,000. So it's going to be a long time, before anyone can really compete with the NLS collection. I also think there's a role for organizations such as Bookshare that provide access to the text, the marked up text of a book. And I think that our patrons want to read the newest bestseller out there as soon as their sighted friends get it. And NLS has gotten a lot better about getting those out. But hopefully through commercial sources and also through Bookshare, they can get access to that book the day it comes out. And the first choice for listening is the human voice. But a lot of people, if they can read it with their screen reader, they will, or create an MP3 file with a Bookshare book, that, you know, with a voice that they like. That is okay if it's not available. I think the most important thing is that all this content is available. One other thing I'll say about the players. Right now, in the commercial audio market, I'm not aware of many players that play as many formats as some of the digital players for the blind play right now. At the NLS meeting, there was a blind gentleman with a book port, and he had some Audible books on it. He had some Bookshare books that he had converted to an MP3 file. He had some Braille format books on that player, and that's what he wants. He wants to get the book in whatever format he can when he wants it. And that player, the player's about $230, I think. For him, that player was a bargain. For people that don't want to deal with all those formats, a commercial player may be just fine, you know. But right now, the digital players are coming out. The digital players for the blind are coming out with a lot more options than in the commercial market. So I hope that answered your question, and I hope some of the patrons here can say what their preference is.
It's Angie here again. I have a book port. I like the fact, as Lori said, that we have access to multiple formats, and that the firmware is upgradable by us, the consumer, with very relative ease. Very happy with my book port. It's been a good replacement for my old Roadrunner, and I'm absolutely delighted with it. So,
this is Pat Price, and I personally appreciate being able to read books in any of the formats. I have a book port, a book courier, and an iPod, and just the ability to be able to put any kind of a format on, and also to be able to get it now. And I am not using the National Library Service nearly as much as I once did, and many of my friends aren't anymore either, simply because, you know, this new technology is really the thing that's much easier. It's easier to download the books. You can have them when you want them. You don't have to worry about a lot of things that we do with sending back books that don't. This morning I had to send back one of the books that NLS sent, and that's because it was, the cassettes are faulty, and that's been a common problem in many of our library systems. So I really appreciate having the ability to not only purchase my own machines, but also to read books in all kinds of formats, Bookshare included.
Yeah, that's a good point, Pat and Angie. And I need to go back and check, but my understanding is I think BookPort is one of the most versatile in terms of the number and types of file formats that it can handle. But if I remember correctly, last time I checked, the BookPort will not play Windows Media Audio or WMA files, and both the OverDrive and the Net Library services are based on WMA. And so I'm kind of hearkening back to this separate but similar situation or parallel development tracks that we seem to be setting up here, where we're going to have blind individuals that I think the market is really splintering, and I'm not sure that NLS is going to be able to recapture its market share, as Pat alluded to in her comments, in 2008, because people will learn that there's all kinds of sources of information. But yet, if they have a book port or whatever the son of book port is by 2008, unless we sort of solve this separate but similar challenge before us, all that mainstream stuff is not going to be able to be played back on devices designed specifically for the blind and visually impaired.
Okay. Just a few months ago, Audible.com content could not be played on the book port or the book courier, and the blind community worked with Audible and with the manufacturers of those devices because they wanted that Audible.com content. And so I'm hoping that's another thing about these projects is with Overdrive, they're kind of becoming more aware that the visually impaired population is an audience they need to reach and that could be lucrative for them. And so that's one of the purposes of these projects, too, is to work with vendors and make sure they're aware that they need to be accessible for the visually impaired.
Yeah, Bookport, in one of its software and firmware updates, does have an Activate Audible thing in its software, and there's also a icon sitting on my desktop that a month, you know, an Audible month demo thingy that I could actually sign up for and pull in some Audible books for my book port.
Hey, Lori, unfortunately, our hour is up. I do have two other questions that I want to just try to squeeze in here in the closing minutes. I know you're a futurist and a visionary, as well as a mover and a shaker. Where do you see what trends do you see in devices for digital audio books? And then secondly, if you want to just make any predictions, general predictions about the future of digital audiobooks?
Well, I think audiobooks in libraries really didn't become popular till the mid-80s on cassette. And I think that more and more people are listening to audiobooks and enjoying audiobooks. And I think devices are just going to get more and more powerful and have more and more memory. And you're almost going to be able to select options, and if you want a super duper device, you know, you'll buy a PDA that has audio or a tablet computer that can do all this, or there are, you know, less expensive devices that will do a few things that you want. So one of the other things we didn't get to talk about was the human voice. For all our readers, we found out that the human voice is the favorite audio that they want to listen to. But Tom, would you talk about your research into what text-to-speech is doing? And that's another exciting option down the road. I'll let Tom tell you, but you know, voice emulation. And if I want to listen to Sharon Ruta read me Little Woman, I could choose her voice, you know, with the new developments coming out with text-to-speech.
Well, first of all, it's too highfalutin a word to call it research, but I am very interested in text-to-speech, and I'm also trying to get my mind around an image of Sharon Ruta using text-to-speech to have Little Women read to me. I am very interested in text-to-speech, and this is just my opinion, but I think the long-term prospects for text-to-speech are quite good. And I think there's just some sort of fundamentals here that make it attractive. The two knocks against text-to-speech that I'm aware of are that it's the voices don't sound very natural, and secondly, that it's pretty computationally intensive. You know, it's not much of a bet to say that the computationally intensive part's going to be solved pretty quickly. That's just the history of computing technology in the past 50 years, is that computational problems tend to go away. But it's the naturalness of the human voice that, you know, most people prefer hearing a live human being read things to them. But some of these new voices from rhetorical.com, a Scottish company, Loquendo, which I believe is out of Canada, AT&T Natural Voices, and there are others, are really getting to the point where it's very natural sounding. And so hearkening back to Pat's comment that, you know, you want to have timely access to a best-selling novel, for example, and you want to have access to a lot of content. I just don't think that narrated audio can beat out text-to-speech when it comes to timely access to lots of content. So I think long-term, I see a really bright future for text-to-speech, but that's just my opinion. Any other questions for Lori before we wrap up this interview?
Well, I'd like to ask Lori about how much it costs. I know it depends on the number of books and so forth. How much it costs for a library to distribute content through Audible, through Overdrive? Just a rough idea. Is it competitive with, like, the library buying CDs or cassettes that patrons borrow? Or could you give me a little feeling about that?
It's hard to give you a feeling, and I'll tell you why, because Overdrive, we're not paying the full cost of what they're giving us, and you know, and I'm not sure what those costs are. It is not inexpensive. We are pretty much buying the content, and then with our grant money, we did pay for a portion of the management program. Another thing, when you consider talking books and CDs, you're having to have people ship them out, so you've got the labor cost. With the with the Overdrive self-management system, it's going to be a completely self-serve operation. So the initial cost will be training and technical support, but beyond that, it's a self-service operation. So it's really hard to compare the two. I hope this shows you why it's hard to compare.
Perhaps that sort of answers my next question. Is there any way in the world that we can encourage our particular states, who are very reluctant to get into anything new, to actually become a part of this really innovative way of distributing their books?
I don't know, Nancy, because people's budgets are really tight, and we've been able to do a lot of this with grants. The other thing is, with the Unabridged Project, we were able to get support of several state librarians who talked other state librarians into it. So it came at a higher level than I'm on, for sure. So, Sharon or Tom, do you guys want to share with Pat how we might get more involved?
Yeah, it's certainly a good question, Pat. And, you know, never underestimate the power of nagging, I guess, would be one thing. And who knows what's going to happen in the next 4 years here before NLS launches the national talking book program, digital talking book program. We may get to a point where a lot of states are looking at trying to launch something like Unabridged or Join Unabridged. It's just too hard to say. 4 years is a long time, though, especially in the digital realm. Lori, do you want to make any final sort of general prediction about digital audiobooks before we call it a day?
No, I just want to, Sharon is tired of hearing this, but I need to say, one of the reasons that we've gotten to do so many exciting things is because of the leadership of Sharon Ruta at our regional library. And she has given full support and for a lot of these programs, and it's very much appreciated. And Tom's expertise has been instrumental in many of these projects, and he's responsible for a lot of the implementation and creation of these. So, Tom, I think I should interview you next week.
Okay, well, I'll take that under consideration. So, thanks again very much, Lori. This has been very informative, and you are involved in many, many different types of projects at various levels, from the national, international level on down to the individual device level. So you've got a wealth of information and experience and expertise here. So I appreciate it and thank you for sharing all that with us this morning. And thanks, everybody, for participating. Have a good day.
How many news on the latest beta for Overdrive? Has that not come out yet?
Randy, actually, Overdrive, over the weekend, decided to go ahead and launch their service. And so on Monday, they sent out a press release. So I've got some, I sent Overdrive a long email message asking them about some of these things. But they've sent out a press release saying that it's officially launched now. So I don't know if the software is pretty much fixed and ready to go. I haven't heard back from them.
Okay, because we got that mail last week.